Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day. Today, we're going to talk about an effort to encourage more farming that produces the food we eat here in Maryland and about the prospects for new job creation in both agriculture and in food production. There are two projects we'll be hearing about in this hour, a food hub proposed for the eastern shore of Maryland and a so-called food incubator being planned for a rundown section of East Baltimore. First, a little background, some things to think about. Approximately 350,000 people are employed in some aspect of agriculture in Maryland, making it the largest commercial industry here. Agriculture remains the largest single land use in the state, too, with more than 2 million acres used for farming. That's as of 2013. But the most common commodities produced in Maryland are poultry, corn, soybean, wheat, and dairy products. The fact is, just a small percentage of the country's farmland and the state's farmland is used to grow fruits and vegetables. The goal of a food hub is to promote development of the local food supply. At least that's one of the goals. A food hub is a central location where farmers can pool their crops and distribute them to schools, restaurants, and grocery stores. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates there are about 300 food hubs across the country, and Maryland is home to some emerging ones and some that are already established. The USDA announced in September that it would spend $52 million to support farmers' markets and food hubs across the country. By working together, farmers save on transportation costs, and they can share expensive equipment and storage space. Today, we'll talk to two people behind food hubs, one planned for the Eastern Shore, as I said, the other for Baltimore. We'll get right to the Baltimore one first. Greg Heller is here. Our guest, Greg Heller, is CEO of American Communities Trust, a Baltimore-based nonprofit behind the Baltimore Food Hub project. Greg Heller, nice to have you on the show with us.
Great to be here, Dan.
First of all, American Communities Trust, tell folks about that, would you please?
Sure. We're a nonprofit. We're based in Baltimore, and we were founded in 2008. And we work nationally on community development projects, working with typically nonprofit partners to pull off important social benefits work and community development projects like the Baltimore Food Hub.
How long have you been working on the Food Hub?
Well, I've been here for a little over 2 years now, but it's been in the works for probably another half a year to a year before that. So it's been in the gestation stage for quite a while.
So you have a site in East Baltimore at the corner, near the corner of Wolf Street and Gay Street, Oliver Street's in there somewhere, right? What is that? What's on that land right now, first, and then tell us what you envision there.
Sure, absolutely. So the project's located in the Broadway East community, which is just north of the Amtrak line above the East Baltimore Development Area, EBDI. The site is 3.5 acres, and right now there is a lot of empty land and some historic buildings, three large buildings and some smaller ones. It's been owned by the city since it was built in the latter half of the 19th century as a municipal water pumping station. And it's been used by the city ever since, most recently by DOT as a storage facility where they were keeping trucks and materials on the site.
So they don't use it to pump water anymore?
No, not for a while.
Okay, just store trucks and things. Okay.
Most recent use, yeah.
All right. So tell us what you have in mind there.
Sure. So what we have in mind is something that we're calling the Baltimore Food Hub. And you gave a definition of food hub before, and I've been trying to change that definition a little bit because the way that USDA looks at food hubs is focusing on the aggregation and distribution of local food,
right,
which is important, but it's not what every place needs. Whereas I do think a lot of places need a food hub, a clustering of uses and facilities based around growing the local food economy. On our Baltimore food hub, we're planning to have some aggregation and distribution, but the main part of it is a kitchen incubator and culinary workforce training program.
I like this idea. So deal with the first part. Explain that for us first. So I have an idea to, say, bottle a great salsa or a hot sauce or something like that. I could use your incubator?
Yeah, absolutely. So before I started with American Communities Trust, I was working for a community development corporation in Philadelphia, and we built a 13,000-square-foot kitchen incubator up there. So I did a lot of research on how kitchen incubators work. And I actually, after I left that position, I went out and did some research and produced a report on kitchen incubators across the country, and we found that there are at least 135 of them around the country. Many major cities have them, and there are slight variations on a theme, but the ones that work best are ones that are truly incubators. They're not just kitchens for rent, community kitchens, a place where you can go in and produce your product. They're really business incubators focusing on giving you commercial kitchen space, the equipment you need to do larger batches, but also the assistance that businesses need, business counseling, access to affordable financing, and most important in my mind is access to opportunities to sell your product. So in Philadelphia, we went to the University of Pennsylvania, and we got them to share the vision and provide us with an agreement to buy a pretty substantial amount of product on campus. Here in Baltimore, Johns Hopkins and President Ron Daniels really saw the vision. And with their food service provider, Bon Appetit, they've provided us the same kind of large purchase agreement that's going to go to the Kitchen Incubator and the Workforce Development Program.
What would they buy from you?
Not
from you, Greg, but from people and small businesses that would use your incubator.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to buy it from me. No, we're looking at things like baked goods, breakfast pastries, cut fruit. Mm-hmm. And there are a few other items. You typically want things that are bought in bulk, that are fairly easy to produce, that are low-risk items.
Your idea is also to have counseling and advice there for people who have an idea. Say they want to bottle a great vinaigrette, their grandmother's vinaigrette or something like that, a great recipe for a spaghetti sauce or something.
Absolutely.
You would give them some advice as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of people have a product, small business owners, I mean. They come in, they have a product, they're producing it at a small scale, selling to friends and neighbors, and they need advice on how to grow an actual business, how to scale up their recipe for a larger scale, how to do marketing, how to get the financing that they need. You know, running a real business is different than running a small cottage industry. And kitchen incubators that can do those kinds of services are the most successful ones.
You said there would be some aggregation there, maybe. The Baltimore Food Hub would be a place where farmers could bring produce?
Yeah, absolutely. We're building in additional storage space. And I know there are some folks already who are aggregating from local farms who are just looking for storage space. So we hope that this site can fill that purpose as well.
Does the site have room for a garden or even a small farm?
It does. And some small-scale urban agriculture is part of the program, as is a community garden.
What did you say, 3.5 acres?
Mm-hmm.
What else do you have planned for that site?
Well,
we covered three things there.
Sure. So the other thing that I was talking about briefly before is, aside from just having a kitchen incubator, we're going to have what's called a social enterprise business. And what this means is it's a workforce training program in culinary skills where people are going to come through, get job training, get some experience. But then the nonprofit operator is actually going to be running a business producing food products where it can employ those workforce candidates right there on site. This is a model that there are also a number of them around the country. One of my favorite ones is DC Central Kitchen. In Washington, D.C.
What do they produce school lunches by any chance? Because I've heard of programs this that produce school lunches.
Yeah, so NPR, I don't remember which show right now, but they did, maybe it was on Morning Edition.
It might have been where I heard it, yeah.
Featured D.C. Central Kitchen recently and their school lunch program, but
okay.
They do more than that. They also do catering and a number of other things. But there are a lot of other models. D.C. Central Kitchen is just a good one. And we, at Baltimore Food Hub, we have an operator. We're going to announce who that operator is of the social enterprise program. We're going to announce that in January, but it's a well-known nonprofit in Baltimore that's got a strong track record of running these types of social enterprise businesses.
So you want to create jobs, too.
Absolutely. That's the main focus of this project. How I was saying before, each place needs a different kind of food hub.
Right.
The kind of food hub that Baltimore City needs is one that creates jobs and economic opportunity.
Now, how far along are you in the plans here? We had a story in the Baltimore Sun, I think, last week or the week before about it. It seems like you're far along, at least with the first phase of it, and you have some financing in place.
Yeah, so the financing's in place for phase one, which is going to include all of the site work and environmental remediation and the construction of a new building that's going to house the social enterprise business and the kitchen incubator, as well as preparing the space for the urban agriculture, community gardens, and some general beautification and landscaping. So that's all phase one, and that's all financed.
Does that include, does that include some historic preservation? Because you mentioned these old buildings.
I did.
I haven't actually seen the site, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So the historic buildings are going to be restored in phase two. So phase one, we're going to start construction early next year, and hopefully have the building open in early 2016. Phase two, we're hoping to start construction sometime in second or third quarter of next year.
So what kind of support have you had from the city? I guess the city's selling you the property.
The city's selling us the property, and the mayor's office has been tremendously supportive, as has the city's food policy coordinator, Holly Freistadt, who's been really terrific in helping us get this project to where it is. Baltimore Development Corp. Has also been really terrific. So the city's been great.
I'm curious about, have you had a model to follow? You mentioned the D.C. Central Kitchen, but in terms of your ambition here, the different aspects of this one, the different facets of it, is there another urban model somewhere that you follow?
Not quite like this. I'm not going to say we're totally reinventing the wheel, but I think we are putting together a larger set and different set of components than I've seen anywhere else. So it's exciting.
The job training part of it is important, especially over in that part of town, East Baltimore, the area that you're in, you know, probably higher unemployment, certainly than the state level, than the state's rate, and maybe even higher than Baltimore City's citywide rate, that part of town.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, all right, well, we wish you luck with this, Greg Heller. Greg Heller is CEO of American Communities Trust. And one last thing, for people listening to this, you know, I mentioned a great a vinaigrette recipe. Someone who's been thinking for years, you know, I'd like to sell a product, maybe at farmers markets or maybe even to supermarkets. This is something for them to consider, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, any entrepreneur out there who has a product and thinks that they can run a good business, absolutely. We actually just today hired our first full-time director for the social enterprise business in the kitchen incubator, and she's starting to reach out to the over 200 people who have already expressed interest in wanting to rent kitchen space.
200 people? And was that, by the way, since the Baltimore Sun story or before that? Was word
before
out about
that,
this?
Yeah, we've pretty
so you've been putting the word out about this?
We haven't been, but people have been hearing about it one way or another and have been reaching out to us, and I wish that we have had more to offer them up till now, but but now we do.
So it sounds like there might be a waiting list for people who want to get in on the Baltimore Food Hub.
Maybe. Maybe there's a chance to open a second project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we wish you luck with this one.
I do want to just add on to the part about the funding assistance. I want to really thank Governor O'Malley and the state of Maryland for their support, and Johns Hopkins, and the foundations who supported it. And I also want to throw a shout out to Scott Plank, who provided our first grant on this project.
Scott Plank. There's another Plank in Baltimore that I'm familiar with. Is there any relation?
I think there might be.
Kevin and Scott Plank? Yes. Okay, with Under Armour. All right, well, thank you for mentioning all that. What is the state's part in it, by the way? Did you get tax credits? Did you get a loan from the state?
We haven't gotten tax credits yet, although we're hoping to. But we have gotten some significant grant dollars from the state that have really made this project possible.
Well, good luck, Greg. We'll check back with you when. When do you think you actually will be open for business? How far off is that?
That's probably a year away, but we'll have shovels in the ground and you'll see construction going early next year.
Very good. Greg Heller is CEO of American Communities Trust, the nonprofit based here in Baltimore that's developing the Baltimore Food Hub over in the, on the east side at Wolf and Gay Streets. Good luck to you.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Thank you for being on the show. We're going to take a break here on Midday, folks, and we have some more conversation for you about a food hub. This one, a different operation that's proposed for the town of Easton on the eastern shore over there in Talbot County. We'll continue our conversation in a moment, but first, a brief reminder that today is the first day of WYPR's year-end membership campaign. Program Director Andy Beanstalk is here to tell you how to show your support. Welcome back to Midday Live here. Dan Rodericks with you. Thank you again for tuning in today. Talking about food hubs, we just heard about the Baltimore Food Hub. Now we're going to tell you about one that's proposed for the eastern shore of Maryland. In Easton, Maryland, Cleo Braver is joining us, owner of Cottingham Farm in Easton and an advocate for the eastern shore food hub. Cleo Braver's plans for the eastern shore food hub have been publicized in the newspaper. I wrote a column about this recently. The Baltimore Sun did some reporting on an aspect of her proposal on the Eastern Shore that fell into some controversy, so we're going to talk about that. First, I want to welcome Cleo Brava to Midday. Thank you for coming over from the shore to be with us on the show.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
You know, I wrote a column about your proposal. I think there was a good idea in there, the Eastern Food Hub. It sounds like a good idea to me. The problem is it got clouded by this other proposal you had for using a Kent County farm, a large farm called Wick Farm, that the state of Maryland purchased, and the state of Maryland was going to lease back to you for a dollar a year. That hit the front page of the Baltimore Sun. You were described as a donor to Democratic candidates. The comptroller of the state, Peter Francho, said that this deal was sleazy. He used that word to describe it. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to respond to that today and then talk about your other idea, separate from the farm idea, which is the food hub in Easton. So first of all, on the controversy about the Wick Farm, go right ahead. What do you want to say about that? Was it Peter Francho said it was sleazy?
I didn't think it was sleazy. I thought it was a really good idea. So
describe it to our listeners, what the idea was.
You know, the it's not unusual for the state of Maryland to lease publicly owned lands to individuals, to nonprofits, to even for-profits. I mean, the land, the state currently leases, I think, over 13,000 acres of land to private for-profit ventures for farming. This would have been the first one, I think, that would have been leased to an organic or sustainable production. But there's nothing unusual about renting state land. There's nothing unusual about purchasing state land and leasing it for a dollar to a nonprofit organization. We've done it in the right word is several or many instances before for veterans projects, for the Sailing Hall of Fame, for the Sailwinds Park. I think the governor rattled off a number of...
At the Board of Public Works, he did.
Right,
he mentioned
right.
other similar arrangements.
So it's been done before where the state, in a very transparent fashion, says we believe that this social interest justifies this idea that comes to the state from some nonprofit organization that has a... hopes that the state will share that goal. And we've said yes on, the state has said yes on a number of occasions, and the state thought that this was a good idea, and we can recount for you all the bases for why it is a good idea, for an economy creation, for making healthy food available, for providing healthy food on a no-cost, low-cost basis to food access programs and the food insecure, for helping existing growers transition to more sustainable production practices, or just diversify to additional practices, for providing an in-depth apprenticeship program for
new farmers
who want to learn how to farm, for providing healthy eating classes and agriculture to young children so they can see that they can grow a carrot, pluck it out of the ground, and it tastes really good. There were a lot of really good purposes that would have been served by this land, and I think, you know, some might argue it would benefit Marylanders in a more general way than some more specific uses that public lands have been put to. So
the Wick Farm proposal, the plan you were just describing for those uses, would have augmented your food hub plan for the town of Easton.
Yeah,
which is a separate but connected proposals, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, each one could actually stand on its own, but certainly together they were magic, frankly. It was a 254-acre farm. It had this industrial parcel on which some of the aggregation and animal processing activities could have taken place in the future. It had these public things that the Big Mill Pond and very ecologically sensitive area that could have been a part of the education of the public. They could have seen greenhouses. They could have seen the working farm.
And farmers would have grown organic produce on that property, and you would have processed, you said, some livestock there eventually. And brought it to the food hub in Easton. Was that the idea?
Yeah, certainly the ample lands would have helped to support the food hub in its initial stages, so we wouldn't be relying on public funds, so we could be self-supporting. And so that food production would have been producing food for two reasons. One, to actually sell, to help support the food hub, so we're not relying on public funds. And two, to actually provide the food that we were going to use in the food access programs under which we would provide low-cost and no-cost food for the food insecure. of which there are many. There are many, many food insecure people in Maryland. The numbers are horrific. And it also would have been the site for a very intensive apprenticeship program where 3 to 5 apprentices a year would have been under a 2-year program, because we do need to find more growers who are interested in growing this kind of food. And so it would have served a number of purposes, including commercial kitchens and cooking classes, where people can learn that cooking fresh vegetables is the new fast food.
Okay. Yeah. Now, to the food hub. The idea of a food hub, I've referred to it as an aggregation site, meaning a place where farmers can bring their produce. This is not soy and corn. This is the food that the human beings actually eat here close to home, right? close to Easton or the Delmarva Peninsula, right? So the idea is to bring that produce there and distribute it from there. That's one aspect of the food hub proposal, right?
Yes, the aggregation and distribution is the core service, obviously, of the food hub. It basically provides marketing, selling, distribution services. So instead of a farmer driving in their Sprinter truck to Baltimore, for buying from local, but it's hard. They have to open their door for 30 trucks coming in, and this way one truck could come in with 30 farmers' produce. We're also quite interested in aggregating in order to access the markets that right now we are not taking advantage of. And by that, here's what I mean. We've talked to people like Fresh Direct who say, look, Maryland's not at the table. They're buying from Virginia. They're buying from North Carolina. For the most part, Maryland farms are underrepresented. So I'm not trying to build something that's going to outcompete a beautiful, you know, what you see on Route 50, the Wright brothers. They have a beautiful, amazing farm stand. And the goal is not to compete with something that already exists, because that's zero, you know, net sum. You know, we're looking to bring something to the bottom line of the community. So what we're trying to do is take all those growers, wherever they are, whether they're just selling out of the back of their truck, or they've built a great building, or they're going to 2 farmers markets, or they're driving their stuff to Spike and Jordan and Amy. We're trying to access additional markets that don't currently exist. And those markets are in different geographic areas. And I'll tell you, New York City has identified Delmarva as the future source of its food. There's a map that was produced by Columbia Earth Institute, the Urban Design Lab. They also have a 200-mile food shed, as do we.
So a 200-mile radius.
Yeah, 200-mile radius.
So the idea is a farmer on the Eastern Shore, say a new farmer who grows, I don't know, lettuce or something, right? The idea is, well, maybe you can sell it to folks in Maryland, maybe, but also there's this other market, Delaware, Pennsylvania.
Yes. New York, New Jersey, Virginia. So it's to access new geographic markets that we aren't currently accessing, and to also access different particular buyers within the existing or new geographic areas. And by that, I mean new market segments like institutions. Institutions are turning the corner. They are ready to be models of good food behavior. Public schools and universities, my college just took the Real Food Challenge. And shout out to John Berger and all those guys at Real Food Challenge.
McDaniel. McDaniel's
so
doing it.
Johns Hopkins
Goucher's been doing it.
Great. Johns Hopkins took on 35%. McDaniel's taken on 20%.
35% being what?
Well, that's a good question. It's whatever they want. And so many of them are defining it as 20% local and or organic.
And local meaning within 100 miles? Well, produced
whatever,
within 100 miles?
However they
whatever
define
they say.
It. They have their own rules. But the point is, big institutions like universities are coming on board, man. And I want Maryland farmers to be there to answer the need.
You're talking about farmers who do not presently exist, right? You're going to need more farmers producing the food people actually eat, what we call farmers market food.
We do, but right? In reality, I want existing farmers who are already here, who've been here for multiple generations. I want them to have an opportunity to diversify and get these sales. A part of me wouldn't be that happy that I'm bringing in somebody from Iowa who decides to settle on the Easter.
About the college student today who's thinking,
yes,
what am I going to do with the rest of my life?
It's the new generation farmers, the young folks like the Caroline County, the Taylor family. The younger generation has diversified to organic vegetables. There are growers in Queen Anne and Kent that have diversified and moved from conventional grain to organic. There's so many emerging opportunities to do so, and not just to feed our pastured organic animals, but to feed Purdue's 20% organic that's emerging. They now overnight have 20% organic chickens. It'd be great if organic growers can be growing, or conventional growers can be growing organic grain if they want to. If they don't, you know, stick with the existing. If it's working for you, it's great. But many have made, several have made the shift and find that it's more remunerative. Allison Howard mentioned that she can get five times the price for organic grains.
Who is that? Who is that?
At Homestead Farms in Kent County. Great.
And she's
great
saying
couple.
What? That she can actually make more profit off of
five times the price on organic grains as conventional grains. So it's all up to the farmer what they want to do. But we're just trying to say there are so many opportunities here that we haven't taken advantage of yet.
Cleo, we'll talk some more after this short break. Cleo Braver, owner of Cottingham Farm in Easton and Talbot County, and an advocate for the Eastern Shore Food Hub, of which we'll hear more about after this short break. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here with Cleo Braver, a lawyer turned organic farmer over in Talbot County in Easton at Cottingham Farm. And she's an advocate for the food hub, an Eastern Shore food hub that would be based in the town of Easton. A couple things I want to cover with you here that I was, you know, impressed by. I think we all know this, but, you know, we go to farmers markets in the summer and the fall, and that's about it. Some people preserve the produce that they buy in some way. The rest of us are kind of stuck with that, you know, fall, the summer, spring, summer and fall. It's, but most of the food that we buy in terms of produce at the supermarket does not come from Maryland. There's some of it does, but very little of it. When you think about it, during the course of the year, the average person who goes to the farmer's market brings home a very small percentage of their annual food buy that is from Maryland or from even the Delmarva Peninsula. Right?
No, that's accurate.
I mean, your main point in proposing this.
It is. Right? And see, the part of the food that's clear to folks that they see is exactly those wonderful experiences that they have at the farmer's market, which, you know, many of them are 5 months of Saturdays or 5 months of Wednesdays. They're starting to merge to be, you know, round the clock with this, you know, year round, which is great. It provides a more reasonable access to food. But, you know, that's like 1% of total food sales in the whole country. Literally, the other 99% of wholesale sales is just unavailable to the average farmer. That's what the aggregation was for, the food hub was to aggregate so we can access those school sales I told you about, those universities, the hospital sales that are saying, hey, Maryland Hospitals for a Healthy Environment, they want to have healthier food that's available.
Right.
And so they're moving to have 20% be local and or sustainably produced. Again, however they define
those things.
Your
proposal covers not just produce, vegetables and fruit, but also seafood, meats, poultry, eggs, all of it?
Yeah, I mean, in future phases, for sure. I mean, it's hard to be a food aggregator in Maryland without talking about seafood. But, you know, we're just trying to sort of recreate using new tools, you know, what kind of used to exist. We used to have 363 tomato processing plants alone.
Say that again?
363 tomato processing plants in Maryland. And, you know, the Phillips Packing Company in Cambridge was like the biggest one in the world. We had a great industry going on here. And we've seeded it, C-E-D-E-D, not S-E-E-D-E-D.
Right, right.
You know, to Florida. I love Florida. I love California. But, you know, they're not helping Maryland growers. We've seeded it to Mexico and Canada so that 95% of our processed tomatoes are now imported from other countries. And, you know, if we're looking for an economy to build, especially if, as a lot of communities are, if we're looking for a resource-based economy to build, maybe this one's it.
With endless demand.
With endless demand because we all eat. With endless demand because we are literally within 200 miles of 40 million people on the Midshore.
This is impressive. And you made a reference before to a Columbia University study that was done on New York City and the potential food shed of New York City, a 200-mile radius for New York City. Where would this, more local food come from, meaning within 200 miles.
Right.
And the Delmarva is in that, within 200 miles.
And it is the green in their diagram. I mean, they have this great diagram of their 200-mile food shed up to Boston and down to Washington or Richmond. And I'm sorry, Washington, and they show the red consumers, the mouths that we need to feed within that food shed, and the green where it's going to come from. And the green in their map is Delmarva. I mean, the green in their map is Delmarva.
So if you're thinking tomatoes or broccoli or something like that, it's New York City, it's a lot of broccoli that you could produce if you had a farm that was producing broccoli on the Eastern Shore of Maryland.
Well, yeah.
Now, I know some people do already, but you're talking about a much bigger scale.
Yeah, we're talking about accessing the big institutions that can be big drivers of change, the schools, the public schools.
You're starting there. What about supermarkets eventually?
That's one of the goals of aggregation, because we do want to reach out to those institutions that should be serving healthy food. But we also want to reach out to the grocers. Yes, absolutely. The Fresh Directs. We want to also be able to provide services where growers can actually maybe access, local markets on a collective basis. I mean, there's a great new model coming out of having a farmer access a 6-day a week market one day, and having staff that represents everybody representing the growers on the other 5 days a week. But for the most part, what we're talking about is moving the produce to Maryland, moving the produce to other states within the 200-mile food shed, to growers that right now aren't buying it. They're not buying locally foods. They're importing foods.
In the town of Easton, so you have in mind a building, a large building where that would serve as the aggregation place, the gathering place for all the collection place for all this produce.
Mm-hmm.
So that building doesn't exist now.
It doesn't, but we would be, we have current plans to build it on land owned by the town of Easton.
And what's been the reception in the town of Easton?
It's been positive enough that the town has, gone through a process of having the location designated sustainable community designation so it can qualify for additional funds from Department of Housing and Community Development in recognition of the food desert, work that we want to be doing. And it's an industrial facility, industrial zoned on agricultural land, so it actually can have greenhouses. We want to have 10 high tunnels be produced so we can have people that are interning at those high tunnels and seeing how food is grown. We can have school children coming and seeing how food is grown and pick a carrot. We're not going to have animals there, but we would have these high tunnels. And then we would have this industrial facility, which is basically a refrigerated warehouse. Half of it would be refrigerated warehouse space that at the end of the lease, the 25, 30-year lease period or extensions of that lease period, the town would own it. And they can use that refrigerated space for walk-ins, for food access organizations. They would own the building we would build at the end of the lease.
And would you operate as a nonprofit or a limited liability corporation? What would be your arrangement for that?
There is a nonprofit organization and what's called a low-profit organization, an L3C, a low-profit limited liability corporation. Here it gets a little hard to follow.
I didn't want to call it a nonprofit if it wasn't a nonprofit.
There's a nonprofit that would be building, and there's an L3C that would be operating it. And the notion of both of them is that they recognize that their prime goals are social goals. The prime goals are not to make money. The prime goals are to be able to pass through as much of the wholesale or resale price realized as possible to the grower. Because I can tell you, after 8 years of farming, it's hard work.
Right.
It's 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year, and it's hard work. And so we really want to reward the grower. But we also want to be able to help to lower the price of clean food to the public, so that it is more affordable, so people don't not get that pound of kale because of what the price is. So there is that. And there's obviously competing goals there. But it's all going to be very transparent what the fees are that are going to be retained for the aggregating services that are provided.
When you mentioned that Maryland once had 363 canneries, just tomato canneries, are you looking at the potential of restoring, again, the idea of processing vegetables, canning vegetables, and shipping them off?
Absolutely, because I tell you something.
Freezing?
It's called value-added. And value-added produce, as its name would suggest, its value is recognized. So folks are quite comfortable buying, sauerkrauts and kimchi. Maybe they're not as excited about raw cabbage. the same sort of thing, taking tomatoes and turning it into sun-dried tomatoes and sauces, taking sweet potatoes, beets, and carrots and turning it into a really healthy, dehydrated chip bag that can be distributed in a backpack program for kids for healthy after-school snacks. Yes, those value-added pieces are very important to help add to the bottom line of the farmer, but also because, you know, their value is already recognized by the public.
Have you thought about branding down the road too? The idea of a Chesapeake brand or a Delmarva brand, so that people in New Jersey or New York or wherever they are, Philadelphia, who are buying the product, realize, you know, this came from not that far away. This came from 75 miles away, 120 miles away.
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked that, because we'd be doing two things. We would always be very transparent about the farm that it's coming from, because, like I said, this is a service for growers. So the extent a grower wants to pull out, their name will have been pushed in the marketing. But it's also going to be collectively marketed as a Chesapeake product. And that has some sustainability directives to it.
You know, the potential here for transitioning from, I don't know what we're transitioning from, corn and soy, I guess. The idea of a farmer at least transitioning to make part of his business this business that you're talking about. I call it farmer's market food, the food that people actually eat versus corn and soy. And, you know, it seems that there's a great potential there. It also seems that there's a potential for young people who've thought about careers in agriculture to get busy. If you create the, you know, you have a marketing strategy, you have a hub to work through to get this food out, not just to Marylanders, but beyond Maryland.
No, absolutely. And it's all a part of this notion of healthy, smart eating. And, you know, the Mid-Shore wants to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Easton wants to be a part of it. Talbot wants to be a part of it. And there are other counties, too, that want to be a part of it. And it's just a natural fit. It's not hard to fit this where we are, because we are, in fact, the largest undeveloped landmass on the East Coast.
Delmarva Peninsula.
Yep, yeah. We have the greatest access to demographic centers, and we've got all the magic pieces there. We just need to have the will to recognize that there's nothing competitive about it. There's nothing that's, you know, we're not trying to step on other folks. We're not trying to replace someone else's sales with ours. We're trying to create sales out of whole cloth where they right now don't exist, and to displace Canadian food, Mexican food, California food, Florida food with Maryland food.
Okay. Cleo Braver joining us from Cottingham Farm today to talk about her proposal for a food hub in the town of Easton. So I wish you good luck with that. Thank you very much for coming on our show.
Dan, I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cleo. And that's the first hour of Midday, another hour of Midday coming up for you, folks. So please stay tuned here. We're going to take a break for lunch provided for us today by Rossina Gourmet. We thank Rossina Gourmet for bringing in lunch for our guests and our staff here. Another hour of Midday ahead, but first, another short word about WYPR's year-end membership campaign. Here's Andy Beanstalk.